We're talking now with Cheryl Rickard. She is CEO of Bonner General Health. Cheryl, thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Thank you.
And as well, we have Erin Banal here. She is the Public Information Officer for Bonner General Health. Erin, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chris.
Well, we want to dive in on the recent decision by Bonner General Health to discontinue labor and delivery services at the hospital. The decision was announced on March 17th, and the press release that announced it cited some reasons behind the decision, and we want to talk about those. And then as well, we want to talk about some of the specific services that are being lost and how that will impact patient care and young families having babies here, and of course, the health care provider community as well. So let's talk first, Cheryl, question to you about making the decision. Bonner General Health has a board of directors as well as the senior leadership team, which you lead. How did you wrestle with this decision and, you know, how did you come to the decision?
Well, the senior leadership team really struggled with different parts of the decision probably for at least a year. The model that we have at Bonner General Hospital right now doesn't really work for a number of reasons. Our model is to have four OBGYNs. Anything less than four is really difficult for the physicians because of the call burden. Also,
being on call basically 24 hours a day, seven days a week.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And the same with our pediatric call coverage, it's 24/7. And then also our OB department, because of regulations, has to be staffed with at least two RNs, even when the unit has no patients. So it's a model that really isn't sustainable financially. So we looked at all of those different components tried to find solutions to each of those things, and found that really in the short term we ran out of options, basically. So I can talk about each one of those.
Yeah, you the press release did mention three different reasons, and one you've already touched on that. I guess that goes to the question of our demographics here. Mm-hmm. You have to have enough, you know, business to keep four OBGYN positions in place. And in the press release, you stated that in 2022, the hospital delivered 265 babies. How big does the volume need to be to make that position feasible?
Well, we need 542 births in order to break even. Most small hospitals, rural hospitals, don't even expect to break even on their OB services, and we've never broken even on our OB services. However, we got to the point that we had to inject a lot more money into the program to be able to keep it viable with decreasing volumes.
Mm-hmm. The other interesting aspect of this, Chris, is if you look at 2022 and the combination of Bonner and Boundary County births total that were reported through the Department of Health and Wealth and Birthing Statistics, it's 642 or 46 that were born, deliveries in both counties in 2022. Bonner General Health delivered 265. That's only 42% of families that are choosing to birth their babies. So whether that's home birth, whether they go to a different location, Libby, you know, up north, maybe Canada, Kootenai Health. So that's another aspect of, only 58% of the population chooses to deliver somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if they're not having babies here at Bonner General Hospital and they're having babies elsewhere, I mean, that implies that, sure, there will be babies being born in Bonner and Boundary Counties, even with BGH not having labor and delivery services.
Right.
I guess that goes to the question, are there still options for young families?
Yes. Yes, there are still options, and we can talk about some of those. But I did want to talk about Kootenai Health, though. And I think one of the reasons that we lose patients to Kootenai Health is because they do have a higher level of care. They have neonatologists on staff 24/7, in-house 24/7. They have a NICU, a neonatal intensive care unit. They have OB hospitalists in case your OB doesn't get there in time. They have pediatric hospitalists. So they and they have a brand new facility that's beautiful. And so competing against that has been difficult. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our patients come here for their prenatal, and then at some point in their care, they transfer to Coeur d'Alene for those reasons.
Mm-hmm. And that's already happening right now. So
yes, this is already
prior
happening.
To this change that's coming
yes.
up.
Yes.
Well, and another reason that was cited in the press release on March 17th was Idaho's legal and political climate. And as the press release stated, that physicians are leaving, and it's a part of it's because the Idaho legislature has passed some bills that actually criminalize certain sorts of medical care that is standard nationally. So can you expand on that point, that it's hard to get pediatricians and doctors to provide this care if they're actually could be sued for and it's, as I understand it, there's basically a bounty for people to it encourages them to sue doctors in some cases.
Right, exactly. And I think the biggest fear from providers is that they can be criminalized for providing really top quality care and standard of care.
Okay.
And so, we've gotten a little bit of some conversation around that we don't like this bill because it doesn't give access to abortion. That has nothing. We've never done abortions other than for medical reasons. And so I think that, the physicians are feeling like they can't even practice good medicine without the fear of being criminalized and facing felony charges. So I think that it is a big part of it. So retaining and recruiting physicians to Idaho is going to be really difficult in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is right now, as we're taping this on Tuesday, actually, there's a bill that's pending before the governor. It's seeking to add some clarifying language to Idaho's abortion law. The governor Little may or may not sign this. We don't know right now. But would this help this situation as you can interpret what's pending right now?
I think it would help. I just don't think it goes far enough. I don't think it's going to solve the problem.
Doctors still might feel threatened by yes. the potential to bring lawsuits.
Yes.
Over types of care that is standard elsewhere. One of which I know is ectopic pregnancies, where an egg implants outside the uterus, and the egg or the fetus would have no chance of survival.
Right.
But a doctor who was remedying that situation could still be sued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially if there's a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the other parts that you announced on March 17th about moving forward. And in the announcement, it said that Bonner General Health is going to continue to provide women's health services at Sandpoint Women's Health. But what services will be lost or reduced?
So we will still do all gynecological procedures, surgeries, but we're not going to be able to do is the OB care. However, we have we're working with Kootenai. We've been working with them for the last couple of months about bringing a clinic to Sandpoint that they would be able to do all the prenatal and postnatal care for our patients here in Sandpoint and in our region. I don't have an exact date on that, but they've agreed to do it as soon as they have the staffing to be able to do that. So we will be able to still have that kind of care in Sandpoint. Bonner General won't be providing it, however.
Mm-hmm. So you can't accept new OB patients at this time.
Right.
And the deliveries at the hospital, we're guessing that they're going to run through about May 19th. Is that still on target there?
It's still on target. The issue that we're kind of up against is that, of course, we had to give our OB nurses and our physicians notice. And so some of our OB staff has chosen to take other positions here at the hospital. About half of them have done that. So they'll be able to stay in the department until it closes. The ones that have decided to leave or will be leaving, you know, timing is really important for them. So that's what we're a little iffy about. If we do have the staff to continue to deliver babies up until that point, we will.
Okay, well, this rolls over into my next question. How are local doctors reacting to the decision? What sorts of feedback are you getting there?
Yeah, so it's difficult for all of us. I mean, none of us wanted to do this. So I think it really runs a gamut. Some of our physicians are really disappointed and angry that we made this decision. Others totally understand. The decision, it depends on probably how much you know about really the OB service that we have. And also, it seemed like it happened very suddenly, and it really didn't. I mean, we've been working on this for months and months. But for some who weren't involved, it happened very suddenly. And so that was disappointing as well, and that they didn't get that communication. And there's several reasons for that. You know, for one thing, we were kind of hoping we'd be able to continue to limp through for a few more months. But it just got to the point that we couldn't do that anymore.
How about the community in general? Well, what kind of feedback are you getting from individuals and, say, some of the local leaders?
Really still the same. The same as our physicians. I mean, you've got the ones that are angry, and you've got and sad, and the ones who really understand what we were up against. You know, this has really been hard on all of us. My own daughter's having her first baby, my first grandchild, in June. And so as we were making the decisions and talking through over the last couple of months, I knew what this meant for my family as well. And I wanted her to have her baby at the same hospital that she was born in. And, you know, so I'm really sad about it as well. But I really feel like this really is the right decision at this time.
Well, the story kind of ballooned up after you released that press release on the 17th. It got national coverage in dozens of newspapers and broadcast programs, even internationally. I saw that The Guardian out of England had a story about it. Yeah. Was that surprising? And what kinds of feedback did you get from this story blowing up so big?
Yeah, but it was surprising. I'm, you know, looking back, we should have probably anticipated that the media would take it and run with it, and that it would be a big political issue for us. We didn't really think like that. There were so many reasons. That was just one reason that made it difficult to recruit OBs. But that was just
the legal political environment.
Yeah, that was just one little part of it. So it was surprising to us that we received the amount of media that we did, or the amount of press that we did. It was interesting, though. The emails and calls and things that I got was mostly from CEOs or physicians from other states that were worried that this was going to happen in their state as well, because of some of the legislature that was moving forward in their states. So Erin, you probably had it better.
Several rural counties in the Midwest have had to close their labor and delivery services. There was a critical access hospital right outside of Boise over the weekend that also just announced that they were closing their labor and delivery services.
Also in Idaho, yes.
Also in Idaho and also rural. Mm-hmm. I think that that's most important, that a lot of these are rural areas where coverage is really hard to find when you have to have 24/7 and you only have minimal providers mm-hmm. in your area. That makes or breaks it. Mm-hmm. And also thinking about different models and working with legislature on reimbursement, all those factors that come in when you're providing different services.
I have to expect that there are some family doctors, general practitioners that handle births as well. What will they still have, their patients that they help, but down in Kootenai, or how's that work?
So none of our family practice doctors in Sandpoint deliver babies still.
Okay.
So, however, that's a good lead in to kind of what we're looking for the future. We're really hoping to change the model so that it is something that we can provide in Sandpoint. And we're looking at other rural communities that are successful having an OB service, and that in most cases that does involve family practice doctors with an OB fellowship. And that way they take care of the mom, but they can also take care of the baby. And so it takes away that pediatric call issue. And so we are looking at that model. we're looking at a model that maybe incorporates an OB-GYNs, family practice docs with OB fellowship, and maybe even certified midwives. So that has been successful in other communities.
Mm-hmm. And you actually
have to build that.
I see. There's a section of the hospital that's devoted to maternity.
Right.
It's a maternity ward, right?
Right.
Will that stay? Or are you planning to do something else with that space at this time? Or
What we'd like to do is we do have some plans for using that for a different area of care. However, what we're thinking about, and this is really a long-term goal, is that we really need to have a totally different space for our OBs and for maternity. I mean, I think that's part of the reason that we lose moms to other communities is because, I mean, we've had the same rooms other than doing a little bit of remodeling. They're smaller than what like a Kootenai would have, or even Libby. And so I think if we were to, when we do bring OB back, we'll bring it in a different space.
Mm-hmm. More home-like, maybe?
More home-like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's because it's a situation where, you're not there for a surgery or something, hopefully, mm-hmm. in any case. But a home environment is more, more calming, I think,
yes.
for the young family. Well, one question I was going to work in. So have you heard from the governor's office or legislators concerning this at all?
No, I haven't. Brian Whitlock is the CEO at the Idaho Hospital Association, and he and his staff are at the Capitol almost every day and talking to legislators about healthcare bills and how they affect everyone or affect the hospitals and our patients. I'm not sure, especially on this issue, that they're really being heard.
Mm. Erin, you mentioned that you'd heard from some other rural community hospitals since this story broke. Are those hospitals facing this a similar sort of political and legal environment as well that makes it difficult, or might make it difficult, to recruit pediatricians?
No, not really. I mean, some of them, yes, I think, depending on what state they're in, but a lot of them, especially in the Midwest, rural Midwest and farm towns, they're facing provider shortages, staffing shortages, that the same other topics that we had outlined before, that they're just not able to keep, you know, pediatricians or having to change their model. I think this is an opportunity for Bonner General Health to take a pause for a moment and really rebuild and restructure so that we can elevate the level of atmosphere, because I think we provide excellent care. I had my daughter here 14 years ago. But elevate the atmosphere and the model, and then the access. You know, the more individual, you know, the more coverage we have to serve the women and families in our community. My hope is that the more families choose to then birth their babies here at Bonner General.
Yeah, and you know, the demographic situation we face, the fact is that our demographic here is older.
Yeah.
The folks that are moving here, at least over the last 15, 20 years, have been older folks coming here to retire.
Yes.
It's not the young families. And yet we want young families to come here. And part of hoping to get young families to come here is to have this kind of care available to them as well.
Right.
It's like a catch-22 situation, right? We want to encourage young people to come to this area, very much so. And but to do that, we have to be sure that we can provide these kind of services.
Right.
So
I guess I would like to add one more thing about pediatric coverage. And this is something that really isn't just, it's not a, just a Sandpoint issue. I've talked to my colleagues in Idaho, or well, in Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, and physicians, pediatricians coming out of medical school now are either, they're either a clinic pediatrician or they're hospital, in-house, inpatient hospital care physician. They don't really do both. And so, you know, the days of the Dr. DeLance who will work 24/7, work a clinic and then come in and see or take call for taking care of babies if they come in the middle of the night, those days are kind of going away with the physicians as they retire. And so that was another issue for us, is that pediatric care. But that's something that a lot of different, especially small communities, are really dealing with. So that's not just a Sandpoint issue.
Yeah, and I think some, you know, just like we said, the news media, as we all know, likes to spin it to whatever storyline that they want to take it. And one thing that, you know, our pediatricians that are here, they're limited too. They're trying to recruit and find housing. And they also have full practices of their own with families.
Right.
They're young. They're the young families who want to come in. And so, yes, it's a huge barrier. Yes, we're in a rural community. But it's also, in a sense, as a professional mom and family, you know, wife, I get it. I understand where they're coming from.
Yes.
Yeah, I think doctors want to have a life too, right?
Right, exactly.
Basically, it's what it comes down to.
Yes.
Being on call 24/7 isn't feasible for an individual doctor. There needs to be a health team, if you will.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
And I think the task force that Cheryl and some other community individuals are leading to really, you know, figure out the barriers and come up with some solutions. Will hopefully, you know, bridge that gap and be additional great services that we can continue to provide down the line.
Yeah, so what I'm getting is the main message here is you're working on a model that will provide these kind of services sometime in the future
and
when
be
it becomes
sustainable.
Feasible.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Cheryl Rickard and Aaron Banal, are there some other points that you would like to make and let listeners in the community know?
I guess I would just like to say, you know, that I'm really sorry that we got to this point. It was an extremely difficult decision for all of us, personally and professionally, and for our community. We really want to serve our community the best that we can, and this really feels like a step back. But I do believe that, just as we said, we needed to take a pause. We needed to regroup and then come out with a better model. So I don't know. I don't have a timeline for that, but we'll do it as quickly as we can and that makes sense for us and for the community.
Erin, anything you want to throw in at the end here?
I just echo what Cheryl said. Be patient. We are working hard behind the scenes to really provide long-term sustainable services here. And we can't do it without our community support and understanding. So thank you to our community for continuing to, you know, trust us with their healthcare services and send good energy our way so we can get moving towards good stuff.
Well, I'd throw in, I think the fact that this has gotten so much attention is a indication of how important Bonner General Health and the hospital are to the community.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the services you provide for us all here.
And thank you for letting us do this, Chris. Yeah. We really appreciate it.